trouble. It's all over, just like that.
I wonder how Floyd feels being beat by a woman for once.
Ireland have achieved the unthinkable. They've defeated four times world champions New Zealand.
Holding on, O'Sullivan's got to drive for that line, but Gabriella Szabo's the Olympic champion. Sonia O'Sullivan is beaten on the line. What a fantastic final lap, but what a response from Sonia O'Sullivan.
A perfect 10.
Katie Taylor. Katie Taylor's up in the Olympic champion, the bowl of his champion Olympic champion.
Olympic champion, I've dreamed of this moment so many times before.
Hello and welcome to Off the Bench. My name is Cliona Foley and this is a podcast about women in sport. It's for sports fans of all ages and genders and we hope it educates and entertains you. Normally we start with a feature interview and then we have a discussion, but actually we can't let the chance of another Winter Olympics coming around to talk about the history of Irish women athletes, female athletes at the Winter Olympics, because there have only been seven of them. There's only been six who've taken part to date, with a seventh as a backup, and the seventh will actually take part in the coming days in South Korea. So how could we let this chance go without talking about the history of Irish women winter sport athletes in the Olympics? And we're so lucky to have one of them in the studio with us. Claire Bergen, welcome to Off the Bench.
Great, thanks Cliona, delighted to be here and talk to you.
Claire, you're not just, and we could do literally a whole podcast about you that could go on for about an hour and a half, because you're not just a Winter Olympian, but you are unique, aren't you? You're also a Summer Olympian.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I qualified for both Olympic Games within a space of 2 years, just over 2.5 years. So it was a quite tight time frame.
What an extraordinary.
To qualify for both, yeah.
What an extraordinary time in your life.
Yeah, it really was, I suppose. And it's funny now, you know, 8 years later after the Winter Olympics, that a lot of attention seems to be brought to it again right now. Even still, like when I meet people, like it's always a really interesting topic of conversation for them. Like they can't believe it. Like, oh,
there you are now.
Didn't realise we'd a bobsleigh team. Didn't realise, you know, people can meet in the Winter Olympics
that. Well, first of all, I should say you competed in the bobsleigh what year?
2010
yeah, in Vancouver. Was Whistler, and a lot of that area was used for it.
Yeah.
And then you also competed in the Summer Olympics.
I qualified, I didn't actually compete on the day, unfortunately.
Yeah, you were part of the 4x4 relay team in 2012.
2012, yeah. We qualified in 2011, the summer before.
So you are, I think, am I right? Yeah. You're the only Irish woman who is a dual Olympian,
and
summer.
That's right, yeah.
Terry McHugh did it in
Pat McDonough.
And Pat McDonough, who were both throwers, weren't they?
Pat was a rower.
He was a rower, and Terry was a thrower. Famous Irish
and, Olympian. Yeah, and Terry has other records with, I think, I don't know if it still stands, but has the longest standing, most amount of national records ever. There's 20 national records in javelin.
So let's talk about... Yeah. Just for this moment, anyway, today we're going to talk about your Winter Olympic experience.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit just briefly. I mean, you were an athlete. You were a 400 metre runner.
Yeah, 100, 200 and 400. So quite a good,
and how did
if
you
I
get
say
into
so
athletics?
Myself, my juvenile career. Actually, family friends or school friends sort of spotted me in the primary school and sort of insisted I come up to Dundrum South Dublin Athletic Club.
And where was home? Where's home?
Home's Fox Rock.
Fox Rock.
So I'd annoyed my parents for a few years to join Blackrock Athletics Club, actually.
Yeah.
Because I suppose I would have been, I think, the quickest in my whole primary school in senior infants or first
class. Teacher spotted you.
Yeah.
There's a fast one.
Yeah.
Slide,
and I loved it, and, you know, did Santry and all those sort of things, like when you're in primary school.
Yeah.
And then and community games and stuff as well.
Competed, I'm sure, in Irish schools events.
Yeah. And then once I joined TSD, then
And would have competed in national championships, would you, senior championships?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. World junior championships.
Did you compete
European,
in World Juniors? Yeah,
European Juniors. Yeah,
everything. So don't be running down your athletics. You were a decent sprinter. You were one of our top sprinters.
Yeah.
And I think you took a break from it. Then you kind of just pulled back from it a little bit. Why was that?
I suppose I got glandular fever. Then I got a stress fracture. Then I tore my hamstring. And this is all kind of mostly during college years. And I lived with other athletes, with other brilliant Irish athletes as well, actually, in the house in GCU together. And yeah, I suppose it was an intense environment, and it was quite frustrating being injured, I suppose, when you're around.
Yeah,
nothing to do with other people. Like,
but, yeah, but you know, you're on everyone around you is flying.
And you're on a sports scholarship, you know, so you were under pressure, like, and I was getting, not throughout all of that time, but during some of that time, sports council funding and stuff as well. Like, you know, it wasn't huge, you know, to be honest. But, you know, there was all this sort of extra pressure, and I just wasn't enjoying it anymore. You know, I went through a bout of depression as well, and I just realised, like, what am I doing? You know, I'm kind of plugging away here and not doing what I want to be doing or not enjoying myself.
Pushing yourself too.
Yeah.
Hard. And so you kind of rolled back from athletics for about 2 years.
Yeah,
what age were you?
About third year in college.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was actually a good time just to kind of, I'd never drank before in my life. I started to have a bit of a life then. And I read a recent article actually about another Irish athlete, male middle distance runner, who was saying the same, you know, just end up taking about a year out and just went
had fun
with his friends. Like, non-athletics friends as well, because you're kind of in a bubble, I suppose, with surrounded by athletes all the time.
So when that happens, and you said, I'm going to just pull back here for my own health, physically and mentally.
Mentally as well.
And how, or where the hell did the opportunity to go into a bobsleigh and try to qualify for Ireland in the Winter Olympics
Really cheesily, I was travelling the world with a friend, and I had this moment of, what am I doing with my life? I was going around at 23 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
You know, drinking and traveling around, having a good time. But then I was like, I could do this at any age. And I was like, I actually have a talent. What am I, like, I'm wasting it doing this. So I ended up coming home early and got back into the club and did a few national leagues and just enjoyed it, you know. Just got back into a bit of training a few days a week and started to enjoy it again. And then during that time, I got an email from Siobhan Howey.
Who was an Irish athlete?
A very brilliant triple jumper. So I knew the name. You know, she contacted me and I knew she was involved in bobsleighing because she was in the athletics community and we'd all sort of heard about that. And, you know, emailed me and a few others around getting involved in the Irish bobsleigh team. So I suppose because I'd only just got back into athletics and I was just in for a bit of fun and, you know, just, well, initially fun and just to see where it went. I was like, well, here's an opportunity handed to me on a plate. So
here's a chance.
Yeah. To go do something.
When are you going to get the chance?
So
Siobhan Howey had this idea to try and get a women's squad together. Ireland had men's squads in the Winter Olympics, but she never had women's. And she enlisted us. And as what happens with bobsleigh, they look for athletes. They look for people with speed and power. Exactly.
So she
went look for people. And who responded the most? Or how did you get picked?
I don't know why I got picked, to be honest. I suppose maybe because I wasn't flourishing or whatever, you know, excelling in sprinting at the time, but they knew I obviously had a bit of speed from, you know, when I was a bit younger, you know. And they'd also contacted Leona Byrne as well, who was a great jumper as well.
Good jumper from Carlow.
So she obviously had the power, but a bit of speed as well. Like, you know, she wouldn't have been slower.
And Siobhan's sister, Aoife.
And then, so Siobhan and Aoife actually had been doing bobsleigh together for a number of years. And then Siobhan decided to step back and kind of manage and coach the team, and then obviously they looked for new people to get involved. So
they needed to get a squad together.
And I'm sure they contacted others as well. Maybe they said no or they didn't work out, whatever. But yeah, we were both up for it anyway. So
and how or where do you even where do you start training for a start?
Well, we went out to Santry on a Saturday morning, and they had a sled there from the Nagano Olympics from one of the men's teams that had competed. And I know people probably laugh or whatever about it, but it actually was really good to have the sled there, and they had it on wheels. So replicated what it was like, the size, the weight, the shape of it, you know, how you get into it and all that. So it was really good to have that, to be able to see what you're getting yourself involved or a little, not really, but, you know, some idea of what it might be like. So, you know, we did speed tests and power tests and strength tests and pushing the sled and everything. So, and then I'm pretty sure literally the following weekend we were in Innsbruck.
No way.
In Austria.
No way.
If it wasn't that week, it was 2 weeks later.
Within 2 weeks, you're out on ice.
Yeah.
That's madness.
And then we, like, Aoife had driven loads of tracks at that stage, you know, so she was very comfortable.
She was
with,
quite
obviously,
experienced.
So she'd driven for a number of years at that stage. So we sat in the sled at the top of the track.
In Innsbruck.
In Innsbruck, yeah. And it would be the slowest track in the world. It would be kind of known as the slowest, you know. And
thanks,
but
to God.
So I kind of definitely needed that because I'm kind of adventurous, but not that, like, totally mad. So I needed that gentle introduction. So when you sit in at the start, you don't pick up the same sort of pace. So
you're not pushing
you're
off.
You're not pushing off. You're not gathering up that speed.
So you literally sit into it and then pushed yourself off.
Someone pushed
from behind,
us off.
Gave you a little gentle push.
Exactly, yeah.
What is it like to go down one of those things the first time?
it was pretty nerve-wracking, obviously. Yeah.
You were at the back, Aoife's in the front.
Aoife's in the front, Aoife's driving in the front and sitting in the back, sitting there holding on for dear life.
Holding on to her?
No, there's actually handles.
There's handles inside.
On the inside, metal. It's all quite metal on the inside of the sled. Like, so you get kind of batted around a little bit, and especially the first time because...
Have to brace yourself.
No, exactly, and that's exactly the word to use. Yeah, that you have to do, kind of just brace yourself and sit still and not move. Actually, everyone always asked me, you know, just sit in the bath and like in Cool Runnings and you know, move around side to side like they do in that, but you don't. You actually,
the key is not to move. I'm
not to move, actually. Yeah, because if you do, then you're kind of changing the momentum of the back of the sled, and then that'll bang into the walls of the track and, you know, change the direction of it and mess up what Aoife is trying to do at the front.
So the key is to be there and to be still. Yeah. And that first run, were you shook all over the place?
Oh, I was, yeah. But then you kind of got the, I suppose there's such an adrenaline, like you're going so fast. Like we didn't go that fast that day, but initially it was very fast for me, obviously, the first time to have gone down.
Did you scream your head off or no?
I don't think I ever screamed.
How calm are you?
Yeah, I don't think I ever screamed.
And how long did that first run take?
It usually takes about a minute, thereabouts. Okay. Probably took a bit longer, I suppose, that first time. So it was pretty long.
And it eventually, at the end of the track, it flattens out and it stops.
Well, you have to put that, then that's the title of my position, would have been a break woman. So that's when you actually break at the end.
You actually broke.
And Aoife would have taken a break, you know, and then you actually would have to scream it because it's so noisy when you go down.
I can imagine.
Like it's metal, it's called runners, what they're on.
Like the bottom of skates, if you like.
Yeah, kind of. They're metal though, yeah.
So they're really loud and noisy.
They're really loud noise, and you're on an ice track, not a snow track, although there is one or two snow tracks. Sam Ritz is a natural snow track.
Right, okay.
But all the other ones are man-made
Actually man-made ice.
Yeah.
And the first day when you stopped and you pulled the brake, and where is the brake? At your hands or somewhere?
In between your legs.
In between your legs.
Yeah.
Okay, you pull
in the
brake.
Middle, just,
She roars, you pull the brake.
Yeah.
When you got out that first day and stood up, were your legs shaking?
Definitely. But then Aoife's very... you know, she'd done it lots of times, you know, and she's very focused and, you know, like, right, come on, you know, come on, Claire, come on.
Let's go again.
You have to lift it up, get onto the back of the truck and up to the top again and off we go again, yeah.
And you physically lift the thing and, put it back in a truck.
Yeah, I think it weighs about 180 kilos.
Exactly. They're heavy things.
Yeah, and then it has to go into wooden sort of protectors, the sled itself, so you don't scrape the runners. So then there are another 20 or so on top of that, so... Like I was very strong. Like
Holy
we all were very
moly,
strong.
You were
when we were lifting that around.
You're physically lifting it all the time.
Now, obviously, not all the time, but you would have other people around.
Yeah,
you know, helping out the track.
But even still,
not all the time, though.
Yeah,
like we'd usually have a helper that would come with us. Like, you know, Siobhan would be there and or someone else, maybe.
Yeah, you'd have another body.
Yeah, another body, exactly. But not
Good
always.
Good Lord.
Yeah. Or like the Brits would help us out.
Would they?
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah.
Within 2 weeks, you actually went down your first run. That's extraordinary.
Yeah. And then we were straight into a season then. Yeah.
Really?
Pretty much. Like, yeah, we had a few weeks sort of training on that, obviously. But
and that was that, were you coming home and studying and going out and what kind of madness was going on there?
I was doing a master's then that year. Yeah. It was actually a postgrad diploma. But so I was doing that and so and Leona was studying as well at the time. So both of us kind of, you know, obviously studied when we were away.
There was a three, you always had a backup.
Absolutely. Yeah.
She was your backup.
Well, yeah, we raced it for
every... Was Aoife studying as well or what
Aoife was doing? Working at Athletics Ireland at the time. So, yeah.
Oh,
so she was working full time and we were both studying that first year.
Good Lord.
So, you know, it was kind of easy for us to take time for college, relatively easy for us to take time for college now. I was doing, mine was fairly full on, not that Leona's wasn't, but I know like mine was like 95 hours. So I kind of had to be like, I had to study when I was away.
I was going to say, probably brought the books with you,
And
did you leave the sled in Europe and go over and back? Was that what happened?
Yeah, that's exactly it. So we left it in Innsbruck most of the time because you could fly in there quite easily.
Right.
And then if we weren't staying there, which we weren't obviously all the time, we'd go there, pick it up and then drive around Europe, mostly to kind of Germany, Austria, Germany, most of the trucks.
And what are you driving? Are you hiring a truck?
A high-ace van.
Are you hiring a high-ace van out there?
Yeah.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah, so Aoife was brilliant tonight. Like, one of the lads, Paul Kiernan, who was also a Winter Olympian, he came with us a few of the trips and other people too. You know, they did the driving. I actually couldn't drive at the time.
But you could pull brakes.
You could pull brakes, yeah. So, yeah, we'd have great sing-alongs and chats and everything, driving around for hours on end.
What an adventure.
Yeah.
What an adventure. And did people go, here's the two Irish, here's the three Irish women coming, here's the Irish bobsled team. Or as you said, the Brits helped you out and they have a really good record
vibe,
in it.
To be honest,
you actually got great support by the sound of things.
No, it was a real nice community, to be honest. Yeah, like men and women, we would have competed and raced and trained and whatever, all in sort of same venues.
So
we all had a bit of crack. Now, obviously, it was competitive, but to be honest, I never ever thought that or felt that other nations looked down on us.
I think it's, Britain isn't an Alpine nation either, and they have a fantastic record of bobsled. It's probably seen in Europe that it's, you don't have to be an Alpine nation to be good at
And as you've already mentioned, like the skill set is power and speed.
Right.
And then I suppose it's kind of a unique skill set for someone to be a good driver. That's kind of, I don't know how you'd necessarily find the best driver ever,
And you were what was called the brake woman then, literally at the back, and Aoife was the driver in the front. How fast did you go?
The fastest was in Whistler at the
2010
Olympics. Yeah, that was 143 kilometres per hour going down that.
And physically, can you feel that?
Oh, God, yeah.
Where or how?
So you feel it with G-forces. So kind of G-force four
in
or five.
Neck,
So in my position, you'd be kind of, you wouldn't be able to be otherwise but head down because of the forces
the
that
force
go down on your
back. Coming back over your neck and
so
your
when
head.
You jump in, you're kind of, your hands down to the side, staying nice and neat and not letting your elbows bang up against the side of the sled for pain and not to, and not to knock the sled around at all.
Right.
And then you feel the speed
very much.
And you feel the power and the G-forces,
Wow. Were you ever frightened?
Yeah, I was frightened in Whistler, I have to be honest.
Were you?
Yeah, it was a really fast track.
How many runs did you have in it?
I actually couldn't tell
would
you.
Have got
because we had a lot of practice runs beforehand. The unfortunate thing with bobsleigh is that it suits the home nation of where the track is, because obviously they've
they
had
know
loads.
It.
They know it inside out. That's where they train.
Right.
You know, so the Canadians did win that year. You know, they got on the track before anyone else did. You know.
Wow.
So.
At what point did you know you'd qualified and where were you? I mean, where were you even sitting when you heard you've qualified for the Winter Olympics?
We were in St Moritz. That's where we qualified. Only like a month before.
Wow.
Kind of the few weeks beforehand, that was it.
And you needed to get the points.
Yeah, exactly. It was top 20 teams in the world and we qualified 19th.
Wow.
I went back to work then for about 2 weeks.
Oh my Lord, how did you do anything?
I didn't do a whole lot, to be honest.
Good Lord.
But they were very supportive
and
of
how
me.
And how far ahead of the Olympics was that, did you say?
Just a few weeks,
Right, okay.
Yeah, so we qualified and...
So you qualify, you're going... I mean, even getting in and out of Europe and competing, that all takes money, that's all cost.
Yes.
So,
I mean,
did anybody give you support or how did you manage?
Yeah, no, we had Irish Sports Council funding. So,
did
you? Yeah.
Right, so it didn't cost you money, technically?
Technically, no. Yeah.
Right.
No, that was well supported.
So thanks to them.
But like, you know, that was down to hard work that people had done previous to me getting involved. You know, like Siobhan and Aoife.
And
probably other people as well.
And as you said, there was a gang of men there, even Terry McEwen, those who'd always been supportive and helped out as well.
Yeah.
Which is very often the case. We say that in this podcast. You know, a lot of Irish women's sport doesn't happen without the great support of men as well. Did you have a crash?
For whatever reason, no, I never crashed in the sled. with Aoife. Aoife and Leona had crashed a couple of times.
Right.
I don't know, kind of just didn't know.
You just be, yeah.
Yeah.
And how do you, I mean, we're all going to be looking at bobsled now.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's an amazing sport to watch and really exhilarating.
Yeah.
How do you steer the thing?
With bungee cords. So, like, I never did it myself now, but so Aoife
inside
would,
in it,
inside underneath.
Cords.
Like, so you'll see when you do watch it that their heads are kind of just at the top of the sled and underneath with their hands,
they're
steering with the bungee
cords. But if
cords,
it's a big solid thing, is there something that's moving
on the
front?
Oh yes, they're connected onto the front then with moving that around.
So there's a little movement in underneath if the runner's slightly
just up
moved
to the front. That's connected kind of to the front of the car, like,
or a little or a cart, I suppose, that have out on the road. I didn't realise so you actually can slightly move the
you
runners.
Can, yeah, yeah.
Oh, but no, again, at that speed, it has to be fractional.
Tiny, yeah, exactly, yeah. And I could never appreciate, I suppose, what Aoife did. I totally respected her, but, you know, I just kind of did my job and got in. And
you were
in
the backs.
Yeah, come on,
And did you scream at her? You're saying you didn't
scream
at her?
No, I just didn't. I was too nervous.
Really? And also you've helmets on in there.
And the helmet was that we wore like motorbike helmets, like, so
And are there specialist bobsled helmets, or you just take
they'd be the best things, really. And we got kind of our suits eventually for the Olympics. We'd just worn skins and thermal tops and things like that. So
and then you got those nice you know, body shaped ones. So
exactly.
There's no resistance. Exactly,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And did you do good times, or, you know, what was your improvement and where did you finish in the Olympics?
We finished 16th in the Olympics, yeah. So two teams crashed, the Brits crashed.
Did they?
Yeah.
And were they fancied?
They would have been done all right. Yeah, I think it was actually the number one GB team. That,
wow,
that
yeah, because they probably have had
two teams.
Yeah,
and the Americans had two and the Germans had two and Canadians had two.
So
we did well, like, you know, to get in, like, in that sense that there was lots of competition, like.
Wow.
Yeah, and then I don't know if you heard or remember the time, but the Aussies and South American team tried to kick us out. And
really?
We were in, like, the Court of Arbitration for Sport, like, in the run-up, when we were in the Olympics, when we were in the village, like.
No,
we didn't physically have to go, but this case was going through the Olympic Council.
And why did they say you didn't have enough points?
I'll never understand their argument. So we were obviously European nation who qualified, and there was no Australasian or South American country represented.
Right.
So, and then as part of the
Olympic qualifying is very complicated, but usually people get their places on the basis of their continent. Mm. So they were arguing that there should have been somebody in from their continent, and there wasn't.
Exactly.
And therefore they wanted one of the Europeans, the last European in out. Was
yeah, exactly.
It?
And the team behind us was
Lord.
Japan. So Japan were in because they were the only Asian country.
Yeah.
So we are the next then up in line.
And so somebody's in the Court of Arbitration Sport, and if people don't know, it's based in Lausanne, but when there's an Olympic Games on, they put a temporary office, they bring an office to the Olympic venues, and they always have one at every Olympics. So if there's anybody, you know, having an argument about anything to do with the Olympics, they can go and have their case heard. It's like a sports court.
Yeah.
And they were there while you were there trying to keep your heads together.
Yeah.
Was that difficult?
It was, to be honest, yeah. But we actually, I think we got stronger for it. Like, we really kind of bonded.
Really?
Like, even it was a bit of a funny situation, but it would have been the same for every country that only the driver and the first break woman make it to the village. So we were in the village together, whereas Leona was actually staying outside the village.
Oh, goodness.
It was
so
like,
she
it was
didn't
an
have
Irish thing.
Yeah. It's an international.
It was an international thing.
Oh,
and it's
that
the same, because I know
well.
With other, you know, with summer and stuff
like
it's quite difficult to get passes.
Yeah,
and,
when you're on the reserve or
So
the two of you were inside the village.
Yeah,
and
we genuinely
even in the village.
Yeah,
wow.
We really did bond and get stronger together for it, I think.
Wow. What
but it wasn't
experience.
Easy. Yeah, yeah.
Was there family out there? Was there support?
Oh yeah, mum and dad. Yeah, and I asked them now. A number of years later, which Olympics do you prefer? And like, mum always says, and dad probably too, but definitely mum says Vancouver. She said it was really special. Like, yeah.
And I wondered what was your overriding memory, because you, as I said, you qualified. You were part of the 4x4 women's relay squad in London 2012.
Yeah.
And how do you compare your first of all? How were they different?
They
summer
were
winter different.
Different. They were different for sure. Because I suppose with London, it was like a home Olympics.
Home,
like,
yeah.
You know, like my training squad were over, my coaches were over, my parents, my brother and his friends, and you know, my friends were living in London. Like there was, you know, there was so many people there, like, which is amazing. And, you know, I'd competed in England since I was 13, you know, on athletics track. Like, so it was nothing new in that sense. Like, and it was,
And Vancouver was the first time you even would have been in an Olympic village.
Yeah, exactly. The villages.
Opening ceremony.
Yeah, the villages were quite similar, actually, which is really interesting. Like the kind of the canteen areas and the accommodation. And not that it was totally like carbon copy, but it was really similar sort of setups and
they
everything.
They build them on a similar design.
Yeah, exactly.
So
it was, why would you reinvent the wheel? But it was just kind of interesting seeing that, like with the security and everything. Like security in London actually was from
pretty,
what I remember,
was even bigger, I'd imagine, exactly.
Because Vancouver was a split village. Because it was Vancouver and Whistler, because the mountain sports were based up in Whistler.
So the bobsled, I'm presuming, was up
in
Whistler.
We were in Whistler,
Exactly.
So like the ice hockey and ice skating
they
and stuff were
down
in Vancouver.
Which is about an hour and a half away, isn't it?
Yeah, it was, exactly. We went down, up and down for the opening and closing ceremony. And we actually never really made it down otherwise in between.
And did you go to the opening ceremony? Because very long in Winter Olympics and it's usually very cold and some people don't bother going.
Yeah, no,
at
it was
all.
An indoor stadium and it is actually
indoor.
Definitely one of my moments, memories that stand out from that game.
Why?
And Aoife carried the flag going in. It was just, because it was an indoor stadium, you could feel the atmosphere, the crowd, the excitement, everything. I was very special. And just the way they kind of had lit it up and...
And very often, athletes, you're standing around for hours waiting
to go in
and queue up.
Yeah,
you didn't
mind
any of that.
No, sure. You're just getting chatting to other people in the queue. The queue. Well, it's kind of a queue, like.
And
you
sadly,
know.
That was the days before social media, so you weren't even taking pictures.
No, we kind of just enjoying the moment, like. I don't remember waiting, like it is 8 years ago now, but I don't remember standing for hours and hours on end beforehand, but definitely what we were.
The numbers aren't as big as the Summer Olympics.
It wouldn't
be
exactly.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
And the Irish team again was probably only about five, so it was a very small team.
There was only a few of us. And management walked with us as well.
Yes.
And it was a really, you know, walking into a stadium both for the Winter and Summer Olympics. You hear, you know, Ireland being called out. Like,
do you?
And yeah, and like I always was like, oh wow, we sound louder than ever all the other nations. But maybe it's because you only
people
think
shouting,
that.
Really? Yeah.
Isn't
that
interesting? The crowd cheering,
maybe there is something there too. It's extraordinary. Did it continue after you were the only women's bobsled? There's nobody's followed you.
They haven't, unfortunately. No.
And why not? Do you think?
I'd say probably because the Hoey stepped back from it. You know.
They were the driving force.
They were literally the driving force.
Literally.
I'd say that definitely has partly to do with it, like funding as well. You know, I suppose with, say, for athletics or whatever, for example, you know, you don't need a whole lot of money to go do it. You know, you certainly do need money to travel and race and do all that.
But
it's not cheap.
Bob's
but obviously, you need your equipment and you need a certain, like, very specific expertise. Sorry, we also had a German coach. Like, Aoife did more so than I did with the driving, you know, side of things.
Good.
Like, so. And now he coached all the small nations together.
We
had a really nice relationship with him. Now he sent us a lovely gift afterwards, which actually I took out only the other day, and he sent me a birthday message this year and stuff, you know. So,
did he really?
You know, he's lovely, keeping in touch. Like,
And I heard you say once that you became an expert in DIY during those 2 years of international bobsledding as well.
Yeah. Like,
why was that?
What I probably was saying was that we looked after our sled.
Yeah.
Like, you know, probably came mechanics nearly, like, not quite mechanics, but we had to look after it, like, as if it was a car, you know.
Yeah, so you'd have to go into B&Q or whatever.
We went into literally getting our sand, like, we sanded down the runners, so there was no scratches or scuffs on them.
Get everything as fast and efficient as possible.
Yeah, so that's what we going in for random things, and then, you know, you'd be looking, I don't know, whatever, you'd be looking for screwdrivers and things to fix the inside of the sled in case something was coming loose and everything.
In case anything was coming.
Like,
so
we looked after it ourselves.
You were literally mechanics as well.
Well, did everything
I mean, it is described as the Formula One of snow sports.
Exactly,
so there you go. You were actually your own mechanics as well.
Yeah, so some of the other nations and the big ones, the Dutch.
Would have had their own.
The Dutch had like
a
massive amount of money. They had lotto funding and things like that.
Right.
And the other big nations, they would have got stuck in it and done the work themselves as well.
Yeah.
But not as much as us, probably. But it was a great learning experience and everything.
Life experience, Claire. What an amazing experience.
Yeah.
Did you, as I said, what sticks out in your memory, you obviously clearly can remember that opening ceremony.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that just has crystallised that will be in your head forever?
Oh, definitely. Standing at the top of the track. So you kind of have like a few minutes really at the top of the track before it's really your turn to go. Like you're waiting there, ready to go, but you have to wait for the sled that's gone ahead of you to have gone down and off the track and everything as well. So
off the track completely.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly. So you'd have a few minutes there at the top, and the crowd are right beside you.
It's extraordinary. You see them; they're right up. I mean, literally right on your shoulder, leaning in over it.
Absolutely, yeah. And there was amazing, fantastic Irish support over there. All the Irish living there, I suppose, and maybe some travelled or whatever. But I say it was mostly the Irish living there, and they really got behind us. I suppose they loved the novelty of an Irish bobsleigh team, and you know, they really were very supportive.
So you're standing there waiting to go down.
Yeah, and just the buzz and the excitement of that, and you know, I suppose obviously I'd competed at a high level of sport since I was a teenager. Like, but obviously this is the Olympic Games, you know, so. That was definitely
totally and utterly unique.
Yeah.
And you, that was the one. Those were the days you were frightened because you were going so fast at
that
stage.
Definitely that.
How long
is
the course?
It's a kilometre or so.
A kilometre.
Yeah.
But you said really a minute, an intense minute.
Oh God. Yeah. Yeah.
Of exhilaration and fear and everything else, and also trying to stay completely still.
Yeah, I know.
And not disturb the momentum.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Trying to get that clear line down.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a really fascinating sport, isn't it?
It is.
You went back to athletics after that.
Yeah.
And
I kind of kept it going throughout, to be honest. So
did you? Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Like for about, I suppose it was 2.5 years I was doing bobsleighing.
Right.
That between that, I was taken along with athletics as well.
Right. And
so it was kind of winter, summer sport.
And then subsequently you became a summer Olympian.
Yeah.
And even more extraordinary that you were the only Irish woman who has competed in the summer and winter Olympics is the fact that you were an international at another sport as well now.
Yeah.
Explain. Well, and we should clarify, first of all, she's a little bit croaky because she was in France last weekend and the voice is still struggling because she was there when Johnny Sexton kicked that drop goal.
Yeah, so
but tell us about your third international sport.
Yeah. I gave sevens a go for a little while.
You did. Were you on the Irish development squad?
Yeah, a couple of years ago. I stopped running, and I suppose it was a bit of a gap in my life, you know, with sport. You know, yeah, it was hard. Yeah, and lots of people talk about it, that transition from, you know, being, I wasn't a professional athlete, obviously, but
an elite competitive athlete.
Yeah, so from that level to what next, you know? And I was lucky out of a really good full time job, and I'm in Deloitte, like I'm still there. Like, they supported me through both Olympic Games, you know, and that's right. Massive that I had that support too.
Weren't you lucky?
Yeah. So I kind of always I had that other sort of identity as such, you know, that I did have, you know, work, another purpose in life as such. But with, when I stopped running, I just wasn't happy doing it anymore, you know, because you always compare yourself to your best time and, you know, I wasn't at that level anymore, you know, and I
running
wanted...
it really exposes you because you're against the clock and you can, if you're not making progress, you can see it every time you go out there.
And obviously there was younger people coming through and everything as well and all that, you know, and it was really tough because I was so involved in athletics, like I was club captain, you know, and... obviously on Irish teams and everything and my social circle and like everything
was wound up in it, since you were a small girl.
Exactly, So anyway, so I ended up getting an opportunity to try it for the sevens. I love rugby. So, and I thought sevens would be good because, you know, speed would obviously be good.
Speed
and
power again.
Then exactly transferring those skills over again. And I'd never done a contact sport. I never played GA. I did a bit of hockey, not that's contact, but like, I hadn't done a whole lot of field sports.
Yeah.
So I gave it a go for a while and... another girl as well, Claire McGlynn, who's another good sprinter, she tried it out at the same time. And, you know, at that stage, they were kind of doing the Talent ID program and transferring people over from different sports. And I stuck at it for about a year and I really enjoyed it initially. But then it was becoming really intense again. And, you know, for me, like, work was getting busy and things. And I just needed to make a decision then around...
What age were you around then?
29.
The time where you have to start wondering about your career and your focus. And you're obviously, they'd been really good to you.
They'd been really good. And even then, when I was doing the sevens, I sort of had to do flexi hours because I had to be on the pitch at a certain time and in the gym at a certain hour. And there was other girls who were students and, you know, and this was their first sport, you know, the first time giving it a go at a real
but
sport.
You had been doing this.
I hadn't done this all my 20s. I was like, right, okay, I need to kind of give it a go. And I started to not enjoy it then as well. It was great for the first two games when I'd run around everyone and score a few tries,
but then
when
they started tackling. Then
when the
they started
when I you. When I had to tackle someone either, so it wasn't great at that. But anyway, and then so then again came to this crossroads again around. What do we do next? Because I still wanted to do something, you know.
Yeah, there's a competitive edge in you.
Yeah. I don't know if that'll ever go. So one of my very good friends, Kira, gave me a shout and said, "Will you come out our women's tag team or short player tomorrow night, whatever, you know?" So went out and absolutely loved it.
Tag rugby.
Yeah. So that's it. And I haven't looked back since. That's about 4 or 5 years ago.
And of course, people disparagingly describe it as shag rugby. Originally, this is used to be a way to meet people socially. But there's actually an Irish, you play with the Irish international team?
I do, yeah. Yeah, I'm on the Irish women's team. Yeah.
When did you last play internationally?
Last summer. So Australia came over to play us and Great Britain came over to play us here in Ireland last summer. Yeah.
What's in the next for you?
Yeah, we've Tag Rugby World Cup in Australia in November this year.
Wow.
So so we've a number of teams going. So we have men's and women's.
Men's, women's separate, there a mixed one as well?
Mixed then as well. And then we've a women's overs, kind of over 30s or
like
whatever.
Like a master's team. Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, there's loads of different age groups when you get to the World Cup. So I'm on that team. We're technically the over 27s, which is a really random age group.
It's very random, yeah.
I don't know where that came from, but that's our team. And with the same for the men's over 30s. And then we've two mixed overs teams as well.
Wow, so I didn't realise it was a competitive thing. I think we'll have to come back someday and look at tag rugby as a sport.
It's great, and like there's lots of people transferring over from other sports, lots of guys from rugby, particularly rugby, I suppose, just naturally,
given
the sport it
they
is.
Have it,
but
yeah.
other sports too, and the standard is really good, I have to say, and I'm really enjoying it because it's nice. It's competitive, but still got that social element.
And
like,
social, I know, and that is a huge thing. If you've been a track athlete and you're with your, you know, you train a lot, even those people around you, it's very individual.
It is,
and you like the social element.
It is, And there's no funding, which, you know, is kind of difficult in its own ways, but it's kind of nice that there's no pressure from, you know, adhere to anyone else's criteria, you know, for the money they're giving you. But, you know, we would love a bit of money, but it's fine.
We do it for the enjoyment.
I personally do, for sure.
We'll come back to that again, actually, because now I didn't realise we had so many international teams and that there was a women's only team as well.
Yes.
You are part, as I said, of history yourself for doing that, for being a Summer and Winter Olympian. But also, we should point out how many, there, how few Winter Irish Winter, yeah. Winter Olympians there have been. Tamsin McGarry was the first in 2002. Her mum and dad were really into skiing, and they actually had a ski school. Her dad worked in RT, and they're from Dalkey. And her sister Kirsten then competed in 2006, and she in also Vancouver, competed in Vancouver with you. They were both slalom skiers. So they were two. Then there was yourself and Aoife Hoey, and Leona Byrne was the backup, was the sub on that team. So then in 2014, the last time, there was one skier, a girl, and I call her a girl because she was only 17. She was actually doing, she split her A-levels over 3 years, a girl called Florence Bell. Her dad was from Lurgan in the north and her mum was British, and she, they grew up in Birmingham. And she qualified and she skied slalom in the last Olympics in Sochi. And incredibly, this is incredible, her sister Victoria, who was only 21 months older than her, she was also trying to get the one spot, and they competed for the one spot. And her little sister beat her. She edged her out for the place in Sochi. Imagine that. So these are the only people who have ever, females who have ever competed in the Winter Olympics for Ireland. And now we have one going in Pyeongchang, and her name is Tessa Arbaez. And I've written a piece for the Irish Times about her. Fascinating. Grew up in France near Chamonix, went to a special skiing boarding school. Her brother's also competed for Ireland. But they have the most extraordinary history, if anybody gets a chance to read the piece, because her great-grandfather on her mother's side came to Ireland to help found the Irish sugar factory in Carlow. And his son, they moved to Black Rock, coincidentally, after that. And her son was grown up in Black Rock, and a French girl came over to stay with her relatives to learn English. And they fell in love and married, and they went back to France. And that is Tess. That was Tess Arbaez's great-grandfather. Her mother's dad. So she's a French girl, but her mother is really proud of that Irish, French, Belgian, because her great granddad was Belgian. So it's extraordinary how people can come to Winter Olympics. But we don't have many Irish, as I would say, full born Irish, that have ever done it as well. So what an extraordinary achievement.
Thank you very much.
You loved it.
I did, and it's great to talk about it again, actually.
Is it?
Just remembering it all,
Will you be glued to the TV over the next few weeks?
I hope as much as I can be, I'll definitely be watching. Certainly the bobsleigh anyway.
And one last question. It means so much sport. What does it bring to your life? You work unusually in an unusual area for Deloitte now.
I suppose now it's a more common area for the big multinational sort of organisations. So I run our corporate responsibility programme.
Right.
So I look after kind of fundraising and volunteering and charity partnerships.
Right. Yeah. And all that sport and all that competitive sport and your life experiences, what does it bring, something useful to you in your day-to-day lives?
I guess it does. I haven't really thought about it a whole lot. But I suppose, quite determined. And and sort of quite driven, I suppose. But I just sort of feel like that's just me anyway.
If you go for something, you go for it.
Exactly. So, I just, the organisation definitely as well, and discipline for sure.
You have to be at that level.
That just sticks with you throughout. Like, definitely softened up a bit. You know, you can enjoy, eating out or drinking or whatever.
Yeah.
So you don't have to stick to the hard diets anymore.
It's brilliant to find out that history, to put it on the record there, because we always say on Off the Bench, we want to keep and maintain the history of Irish women's sport. So much of it gets lost, and we hope that this is here on this podcast and it's there forever now, and people will hear the true story of the Irish women's bobsleigh team at the 2010 Vancouver Olympics. Congratulations, and thanks a million, Claire.
Thanks a million, Cliona.
Just before we go, just to let you know that this episode and all our previous episodes can be found on iTunes and also on the podcast section of Off the Ball on newstalk.com. If you have any feedback or anything, let us know. We also have a Twitter account. It's at Off the Bench. It used to be at Off the Bench NT. It's slightly changed now, but you'll find it anyway if you look it up. So let us know if there's a bit of Irish women's sports history like this that you want us to talk about or check out for you, or if you have any ideas. And until the next time, enjoy yourselves and enjoy your sport. Thank you.